Good afternoon. It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Emily Woodbury sitting in for Ben Kiefer. And it's Wednesday, so of course it's Politics Day today. I'm joined by University Professor of Political Science at Iowa State University, Stefan Schmidt. Hi, Stefan.
Hi, Emily.
And Dave Anderson. He's an Assistant Professor of Political Science at Iowa State University. Hi, Dave.
Hi, Emily.
So we're less than 3 months before the November election. Both Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton have revealed their plans for counterterrorism. One approach more focused on isolationism, one a little bit more centered on engagement. And we want to hear from you. How would you like to see the next president of the United States deal with terrorism? You can call us at 866-780-9100. Again, that number, 866-780-9100. Email us at rivertoriver@iowapublicradio.org. You can tweet us at IPR Talk or send a message on our Facebook page. We're also going to be talking about the debate preparation of both of the candidates. So if there's something you really want to hear come up in those debates, you can let us know what topics you're interested in hearing as well. And I think we're going to start the conversation this hour talking about some big news on the Trump campaign staff. The campaign's shaking things up a little bit within the top ranks. Stefan, can you explain to us what's going on here?
Well, you know, the Trump campaign has been churning around and firing people and hiring people and moving people around. And it's partly because apparently Mr. Trump is frustrated with the sort of advice that he's getting. He doesn't like advice. He says, I'm Donald Trump. This is how I run my campaign. But campaign staff are supposed to help a candidate and kind of nudge him and suggest things. And he doesn't like that. And so, you know, he's been doing this and now he's done it again. And also, of course, his big shot campaign guy, suddenly, it turns out, had a bunch of contracts with some shady political groups in Ukraine, and there's all kinds of news breaking about money exchanging hands and so on. So he had to basically demote Manafort a little bit. I would have fired him, but he just demoted him, you know.
Yeah, you're speaking of Paul Manafort.
Paul Manafort.
Yeah, he advised presidential campaigns of Gerald Ford, Ronald Reagan, George H. and W. Bush, and Bob Dole.
Yes, and then he advised the Ukrainian dictator and got a whole bunch of money that apparently appeared in a secret portfolio that was just discovered by the anti-corruption group in Ukraine. So when he was helping out some of the successful Republican candidates and some not so successful, he was not as controversial. But then he worked also for Ferdinand Marcos, the dictator of the Philippines. And so, you know, this is not the kind of stuff that voters feel comfortable with, having someone so closely advising a presidential candidate who is embroiled, if nothing else, at least in the appearance of conflicts of interest. And so I think the campaign is trying to figure out how to move on. And, you know, we don't really know if the shakeup that occurred is going to help very much. And you know, I have my opinion, but I think Dave probably has, Dave Anderson has his own opinions or views, analysis of that.
I'm sure you do. Dave, do you want to jump in on this?
Well, I think Stefan's totally right. The shakeup of the Trump campaign is kind of necessary at this point. He's falling so far behind in the polls nationwide and on the state levels that the campaign needs some fresh ideas and they need something to start working. I don't think the campaign has really been on the right foot since Corey Lewandowski left. And I'm kind of surprised they didn't consider bringing him back. I know the internal people in the Trump campaign didn't like Lewandowski, but at least he was winning.
You know, I'm curious because Trump's now hiring Stephen Bannon. He's a top executive for Breitbart News. Do you think it's very intentional to have a media executive as a top advisor?
Absolutely. I think this is the Trump strategy, is that he is trying to avoid politics as usual. He's trying to avoid typical traditional campaign tactics. And he's treated this whole campaign so far like it's a media enterprise and not a political campaign. And in the primary, he did really well with that. He didn't have to launch his own TV ads. He didn't do the traditional canvassing of the public. He just had big TV events and got lots of free media through the press. In the general election, it's just not working. And he's kind of taking the tack that he's going to try to change his media strategy, but not adopt a traditional campaign. And I think everybody is shaking their head saying, I don't know if this is the right strategy right now.
Well, also this week, Donald Trump's campaign confirmed that they're going to start airing general election TV ads. And actually, that will start this week in a few battleground states. But, you know, as you mentioned, he has said in the past, specifically actually in Maine, this June, he kind of talked about raising campaign money. And then he said, quote, first of all, I don't even know why I need so much money. You know, I go around and make speeches. I talk to reporters. I don't even need commercials if you want to know the truth, end quote. So it's kind of interesting that they're changing up their strategy now.
Well, I don't think they're changing their strategy because actually what he's doing is many, many conservatives and focus group people are saying is going not to where the mainstream Republicans would like him to go to appeal to independents, to calm down, to let Hillary Clinton self-destruct more and not step with his tweets all over bad news on the Clinton side. He seems to be going now to the most extreme hardline conservative ideological positions because Breitbart, you know, Breitbart is right out there on the far right. And a lot of analysts say that there aren't enough voters out there. And it isn't necessarily going to sit well with sort of mainstream Republicans and with independents, which are, you know, necessary for him to win. It probably isn't going to work all that well with women voters. And the polling numbers, and again, Dave Anderson knows more, has studied those more carefully, the Republicans and Trump in particular really are losing the millennial voters, the next generation of voters who are now beginning to come into the process because they just don't like those positions. And so it's hard to see how, you know, this reorganization is going to actually, you know, get the kinds of voter support that Trump has been lacking.
Mm-hmm. Now, you know, back to those television ads, and I think that's interesting you point out millennial voters because a lot of millennials don't have, you know, your traditional television, so they won't see those ads, although they'll see ads online. I'm wondering, what do you both think those ads may contain? Do you think they're going to be attack ads, or do you think they're going to be very promotional of Donald Trump?
Well, I would hope they would be very promotional of Donald Trump, but I'm really not sure. I haven't really seen a lot out of the Trump campaign that suggests he's trying to promote his brand as much as he's trying to make the argument that Hillary Clinton is such a bad alternative that he should be elected just because he's not Hillary. It's about time in his campaign to really start trying to be positive. And in his positive messages, I don't even think he should do a contrast ad right now. He should just forget about Hillary and convince the voters that he's not scary.
If you want to join our conversation, you can call us at 866-780-9100. Email us rivertoriver@iowapublicradio.org. Again, like we mentioned, about 3 months out before the election, and both candidates are just, you know, starting to prepare for the first general election debate. That I can only imagine is one of the toughest exercises leading up to an election. So we have Clinton being led by senior policy advisor Jake Sullivan, and Roger Ailes is reportedly helping Trump prepare.
But he denies it.
Yes, yeah.
Right, so it's a secret advice because Roger Ailes is in big trouble. He's not very popular with women voters right now because of his problems with alleged sexual harassment at Fox,
sure,
for which he got fired. So it's hard to see how that's very helpful, although he is a brilliant strategist and got W. Bush elected. But on the other hand, the question is, can Donald Trump, is he going to read from a teleprompter at the debates, or is he going to be Donald Trump, in which case, you know, it'll be very harsh and divisive and may not sit well anymore in the debates than it has apparently with a lot of voters, because as Professor Anderson said, his poll numbers are not going in the right direction right now.
So and this seems like the Trump campaign has just made the decision that you're not going to get your candidate to be a policy expert in another 30 days. There's just not enough time. And the fact is, Hillary Clinton has been at this for 30 plus years. She is a policy expert in every domain. Whether you agree with what she thinks or not, you have to admit she's got expertise. Donald Trump is a neophyte. He is new to this game. He does not delve into the weeds on policy. If Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump get into a debate over policy details, he's going to get crushed. Bringing on Roger Ailes, I think, means that the Trump campaign recognizes this and that they're going to try a media strategy. All of his answers are going to be devoid of policy information. They're going to be short. They're going to be pithy. They're going to be exciting. They're probably going to follow the strategy that Sarah Palin followed. When she debated Joe Biden, everybody was worried about her, the fact that she was just out of her league. She's debating against a guy with 30 years of federal government experience, and she'd been a governor in Alaska. She didn't know much about the federal government. So they gave her short, pithy, kind of good press release sound bites, and she did pretty well in that debate. I think that's the strategy the Trump campaign is going to go right now.
Mm-hmm. Kind of an emotional appeal rather than fact-based.
Absolutely.
Or not fact-based, but yeah. You know, I wonder, though, I mean, with you have two very different candidates standing next to each other, and, you know, we know from the primary debates that Donald Trump very much goes for kind of the personal attacks, and that must be really hard to prep for.
It can be, because most people get ready for a debate to go after policy issues. This is really your chance to stand out and distinguish yourself from your opponents and say, this is what I stand for, and this is kind of traditionally what we think about politics. It's supposed to be a battle of ideas. And Trump threw that away in the Republican primary, and it suited him really, really well. He threw his opponents off guard. They felt uncomfortable next to him, and he came out looking like he was just sailing through the debates while everybody else was struggling. It may be very different, though, when you get into a general election debate where there is not broad consensus on the issues. With the Republican Party, everybody agreed we were going to cut taxes and cut spending, so you could bring out personality and say, well, let's forget about how the size of my tax cut differs from the size of somebody else's tax cut. Let's just talk about how I'm more confident up here. I'm better at this. Well, when you put Hillary Clinton on the stage, there is no agreement on the issues. So the public is going to look to see, well, who has a plan? What is your plan? What do I agree with? And Trump's got to come up with something.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I'll admit, as a journalist, I'm interested to see also not how Trump responds to Hillary Clinton, but to the moderator. Because, you know, in a lot of his rallies of recent, he's brought out the media, kind of this liberal media that's very biased towards him. You know, I wonder, Stefan, do you predict that he will interact much with the moderator in these coming debates?
Oh, yeah, he'll interact a lot with the moderator if the moderator asks any questions that Donald Trump does not want to be asked. You know, he's going to say, you see that the liberal left-wing media that's been bought by the Clinton campaign and the Clinton Foundation and the left-wing radicals is once again twisting things around. And, I mean, he just pretty much fired the New York Times this week because they revealed some stuff about Paul Manafort. I think that was the issue.
And now Chris Christie,
who apparently, you know, dispensed with some tax money that Donald Trump should have paid to the state of New Jersey. And I'm sure people in New Jersey are not happy to hear that. So Donald Trump thinks that attacking the news media is a winning proposition. But, and it's true that conservatives generally don't like the media because they call it, you know, the lame street media and, you know, the left-wing media and so on. But I think in a general election, voters would like information, and the media is where you get that. And so attacking the media there may help him with his hardcore supporters, but I don't think that's what people want to hear in a debate. I don't think they want to see the debaters fighting with the moderators. They want answers to questions about the economy, and you mentioned how to fight ISIS, which I assume you're going to come to in a minute. That's what voters want to hear.
Mm-hmm. Well, if you just tuned in, this is River to River from Iowa Public Radio. I'm here with political analysts of Iowa State University, Stefan Schmidt and Dave Anderson. And we want to hear from you. What's on your mind a few months out before the election? Do you have an opinion about how the U.S. should be dealing with terrorism, both at home and abroad? You can give us a call at 866-780-9100. Email us rivertoriver@iowapublicradio.org. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. And again, that number to call is 866-780-9100. And Sam has called in from Barley. Hi, Sam. Good afternoon. Sam, are you there? All right. Well, we seem to have lost Sam. Well, let's go on to talk about Donald Trump's plans for countering terrorism. This Monday, he revealed his plans, pledging to tighten restrictions on immigration from Muslim countries and to assess allies of the U.S. based on their commitment to defeating what he's been calling radical Islam. He spoke against nation building abroad, and this seems to suggest maybe a Trump presidency would take a more isolationist approach to global affairs. Here's some remarks Trump made during a speech about fighting terrorism this week.
Unlike Hillary Clinton, who has risked so many lives with her careless handling of sensitive information, my administration will not telegraph exactly military plans and what they are.
Trump also blamed President Obama and Clinton for the rise of the extremist group ISIS.
I've often said that the great General Douglas MacArthur and the great General George Patton would be in a state of shock if they were alive today to see the way President Obama and Hillary Clinton try to recklessly announce their every move before it happens, like they did in Iraq, so that the enemy can prepare and adapt. Their enemy says thank you.
So, Stefan, do you see Trump's message resonating with his supporters?
Yeah, with his supporters. That's, you know, the whole problem is you cannot run a primary campaign through November 6th, is it? 8th? Yeah, through the general election. You have to, in a sense, campaign one way to the partisans, you know, to get the nomination. They're usually more conservative in the Republican Party, more liberal in the Democratic Party. And then you have to slowly pivot and flip-flop, if you want to call it that. Yep, flip-flop or pivot to the much broader electorate that's actually going to vote in November. And that's a lot of people who are no party. You know, in this country now, I mean, in some cases, it looks like 40% or so of people are no party, right? And so those people are not interested in the message that you concocted for the primary, which may have been very successful. You've got to talk about some other things. And I think the Trump campaign is having a real difficulty understanding that. And Donald Trump keeps saying, I saw him this morning, not personally, but I saw him this morning saying, look at the crowds I'm getting and look at the level of enthusiasm. I mean, they're crazy about me. They love me. There were 10,000 people there. Well, there are 100 and some million voters, not 10,000, in the general election. And the fact that 10,000 people are happy with you and love you and make you feel really great, you can't ignore the larger aggregate numbers that represent those people that you're not talking to and who are not there clapping for you.
Mm-hmm. You know, Dave, I'm curious, from what we know about from public opinion polls, do we know what most kind of general election Americans support, kind of engagement abroad, something more like what Hillary Clinton's suggesting, or kind of an isolationist approach?
What we know about public opinion is that the public generally just doesn't understand foreign relations very well. It is a very complicated scenario. And we have a tradition in this country that usually politics ended at the water's edge, and at least our political elites recognized, you know, this isn't really something for public debate because the public probably doesn't understand the nuance and the difficulty of military engagement, especially today when we have a wide variety of options, including special operations, Navy operations, Air Force operations, Army operations. Do we put boots on the ground to just drop bombs from the sky, cruise missiles from a ship? It's horribly complicated. And to turn it into a campaign rhetoric is difficult. Donald Trump is trying to say that the solutions to ISIS are simple. They're just really simple. And he kind of goes back and forth to saying, I'm going to be much more aggressive. I'm just going to destroy them. But I'm not going to actually put our troops in harm's way. I don't know what that means. It's very hard to talk military terms in simple ways. And I think he's starting to trip up a little in this.
Mm. And of course, you know, if there was a Trump presidency and he went through with his plans to counter terrorism, this would have a huge impact in lots of different ways. One of them I'm thinking is the refugees currently all over Europe.
Well, yeah, but again, Donald Trump is not the king of the world, even if he were to be president of the world. So the, you know, the problems of North Korea, refugees in Europe, terrorism, ISIS, the Chinese expansion in the Pacific, You know, as General Eisenhower found out when he became president, the president is not the commander of the Allied forces who can say we're going to attack this German position and wipe them out. The president is actually a kind of negotiator who has to work his way through Congress and the courts and interest groups and all kinds of sticky places. And to just yell at him and tell him you're going to do this and insult them has never worked, because they will simply walk away. And there are people in this country and groups who are much more powerful than the president. And if they basically get annoyed with the president is isolated and finds himself totally powerless. I mean, you know, I can see already a lot of interest groups and powerful groups saying, you know, you cannot start a trade war with China and other trading partners. You can start some negotiations. Usually those are not done in public. You don't do it by insulting countries on TV. You do it by sending your trade delegates. You don't do it yourself as president often. You cannot simply say we're going to, you know, not support countries in NATO unless they pay up their dues and let NATO go down the toilet, because NATO is the thing that has kept peace in Europe since World War II. And there are a lot of people who are going to say, you know, this is not a workable idea. So I think the problem is when you're the CEO of a family-owned company, you can make decisions and you can pretty much make those decisions at 2 o'clock in the morning in your bedroom over, you know, a cup of coffee or whatever. But when you're president, you have to negotiate a lot of hurdles. And Trump isn't used to doing that. He's used to having his way, because CEOs of privately owned, family-owned companies are, you know, they're the boss.
Yeah, and I would add to that that as the CEO of a company, especially a very wealthy company, you have the freedom to try new things and fail. And if you fail, you know, hopefully the profits from your other businesses will kind of overwhelm them. As president and as a military commander-in-chief, you don't really have the option to try something and fail because there are lives at stake.
And you can't go through Chapter 11.
Yeah.
You know, if the president makes huge mistakes, he can't say, well, I'm going to get my lawyers and we'll declare bankruptcy and we'll write all this off, even though Trump has suggested that that's what he would do as president. Maybe he doesn't understand that there are some laws and international conventions and treaties and banking laws and all kinds of securities and exchange laws regarding American, you know, government bonds and things that that just can't be done. So it's a different world, right?
Sure. Well, we're coming up on a break. We're going to have to continue this conversation in just a few minutes. I'm here with University Professor of Political Science Stefan Schmidt at Iowa State, Dave Anderson, Assistant Professor of Political Science, also at Iowa State University, and we would love to hear from you. For you, those of you on the line, please stay on the line. Otherwise, you can join our conversation by emailing rivertoriver@iowapublicradio.org. You can tweet us at IPR Talk, send a message on our Facebook page, or call us 866-780-9100. We'll be back in just a moment. This is River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. You're joining us midstream on this edition of River to River from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Emily Woodbury in for Ben Kiefer. And with me today, I'm talking politics with University Professor of Political Science Stefan Schmidt and Assistant Professor of Political Science Dave Anderson of Iowa State University. And before the break, we asked you what you are looking forward to hearing candidates debate about in the coming weeks. And I'd love to take this question from Huxley, Iowa. Hi, Deanna. How are you?
Good. This is Deanna.
Hi. So tell me a little bit about, you know, what you're hoping for in the debates.
I would hope to see a third-party candidate on the stage. I know a lot of people are undecided, and they don't like either candidate. So what's the chances of us getting Gary Johnson or somebody else from a third party on the stage at the debate?
Interesting. And are you set on Gary Johnson? Do you know who you're going to vote for yet in November?
I feel pretty confident in Gary Johnson. I think I really just want to show people that there is another option if they don't like the other two. So it's time to start supporting a third-party candidate.
Okay. Well, Stefan, do you want to tackle that? What are the chances of Gary Johnson getting on the stage?
Absolutely perfect question. And the reason is yesterday, I talked to a good friend of mine who is in the medical industry here. And her family are all Southerners. They all live in Mississippi and Alabama. And we talked about Gary Johnson. You know what she told me? She said, Stefan, all my relatives in those states said they can't vote for Trump and certainly not Clinton, so they're going to vote for Gary Johnson in those states. I thought that was something I haven't heard. It's a sleeper thing. He may only have 8% right now in all these surveys and polls, but there may be a lot of people who are going to vote for him just as a protest or just as someone who would be more acceptable. It's very difficult to get third-party candidates in on debates because the two main candidates, even if it's people who don't like each other like Trump and Hillary Clinton, they just don't want the competition. It's just a distraction. It makes the debates three, and we know that in sports, there are no sports where three teams compete at the same time, right? I mean, sports, it's, you know, the U.S. versus Brazil, or, you know, in basketball, it's two teams playing against each other. And so it would be, I think, difficult for ticket to get in on the debates, even though I think it would be great. I would like to see that. I would like to see more diversity in the debates. But I think it'll be very difficult, and I think the die has been cast and the rules have been set for the debates. I don't think either Clinton or Trump would agree to it.
Mm-hmm. Well, as long as we're talking, third-party candidates, Dave, what do you think about Green Party candidate Jill Stein? How much of the vote do you think she'll end up taking away?
I think she'll take under 5%. She probably won't make too much of a difference in the overall race. Johnson is more likely to take somewhere between 10 and 15 if both of their candidacies go forward strongly. It's highly unlikely either of them will make the final presidential debates. The debate committee just released the rules, I think, on Monday about who was going to be allowed in. And there's a 15% polling requirement, and they released the five polls that they're going to use. And kind of hurting Johnson further was that they said they would use polls for Hillary, Trump, Johnson, and Jill Stein, which means that the people who are really fed up with the Trump and Clinton candidacies have to choose between either Johnson or Stein. It would have been much better for Johnson if he was the only one on the ballot.
Mm.
I think it's highly unlikely he's going to make the debate. And really, I think it's highly unlikely that he's going to make too much of a difference in the final election. He'll probably siphon off more votes from Donald Trump than Hillary Clinton, and Trump is already losing. So I think the biggest difference that Johnson and Stein will make in this overall campaign is that they're probably going to prevent whoever wins, likely to be Hillary Clinton, from getting a majority of votes, and that makes it really hard to govern if you can't even win an electoral mandate with a majority of the vote.
Mm-hmm. Well, I will say, at least from Iowa numbers and an NBC Washington Street Journal poll released yesterday, you're actually pretty close, Dave, in Iowa. If they're Gary Johnson, putting him in the mix, Green Party candidate Jill Stein, and Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump, Hillary Clinton and Trump are tied 35% right now. Johnson is at 12%, and Jill Stein stands at 6%. So she's actually risen 2% from July, and Johnson is up 5% from July.
This is interesting because obviously there's a restless population out there. Some of it is Bernie Sanders supporters who actually just can't vote for Hillary Clinton and want the most liberal, which would be Stein. And then, of course, the Libertarian ticket or the Independent ticket is interesting because the vice presidential candidate there was governor of Massachusetts and is a certified Republican, and Gary Johnson as well. People are and then there's another guy who just decided to run. I can't remember his name, but it's a write-in campaign of some sort. Maybe you know his name, but I think he was with the CIA or something. And that's another distraction, and it certainly would be primarily a distraction for the Trump campaign to have someone like that. But write-in campaigns don't work very well at all.
No.
I had my name written in one time, I think, by some of my students who, were very enthusiastic about my teaching, but I didn't get elected. So,
well, before the break, we were talking about counterterrorism plans. I'd like to get back to that. We talked about Donald Trump's plans to counter terrorism. But Hillary Clinton's also rolled out her plans, and she's proposed a coalition air campaign against ISIS and more support for partners engaged in ground operations. And she's said that our allies would be more willing to work with her administration than one led by Trump. Here she is at a campaign rally with Vice President Joe Biden in Pennsylvania on Monday.
He's talked about sending ground troops, American ground troops. Well, that is off the table as far as I am concerned. So we'll wait and see what he says today. But, you know, sometimes he says he won't tell anyone what he'll do because he wants to keep his plan, quote, secret. And then it turns out the secret is he has no plan.
Dave, can you respond to that comment from Hillary?
It's a really well-targeted political attack. She's just kind of baiting Donald Trump and saying, well, his big military philosophy seems to change from day to day, and largely he says, well, he's not going to tip his hat and show our enemies his plan, which, you know, his supporters love hearing that. They already believe that Hillary Clinton is a horrible option. They don't trust Hillary Clinton. So when Donald Trump says, you know, we can't trust her, and, hey, I'm going to keep my plan secret so it's more effective, they love it. It sounds great to them. For the people who are just tuning into the election, though, who don't really know much about either candidate, they know they don't like either candidate too much, they hear that and they say, well, you know, that's not very convincing. I mean, yeah, I don't like Hillary Clinton, but what's your alternative? A secret? I can't vote for a secret. You have to give me something to vote for. And that's where the Trump campaign really is struggling right now, is that they're not giving non-Republicans, independents, unhappy Democrats, they're not giving those people something to really vote for, other than what they talked about in the primary, which is generally Republican kind of red meat issues.
It's River to River Politics Day today. You can join our conversation by calling 866-780-9100. And Robert's calling in from Urbandale. Hi, Robert.
Hello.
So what's on your mind?
And, well, I liked the conversation. It's great to listen. One quick point, and then I just ask a question.
Mm-hmm.
I really would love to see the candidates debate the Trans-Pacific Partnership. I know that Trump was against it early on. As an economist, I have a good friend who worked on that trade agreement, a piece of it, and there are a lot of problems with that trade agreement. I don't know if we have time to go into it all. I'd love to see them debate that. And I think that when you look at Donald Trump and his policies and the things that he said, he can be bombastic, but there are a lot of things that he's mentioned about trade policy and other things with immigration, specifically illegal immigration, which I think people conflate the two, where he's right on point. And I just think that the media is liberally biased. And, for example, on your panel today, I don't see anybody that's for Trump, so you could argue for and against. I just hear people bashing Trump the whole way and promoting Hillary Clinton. So my question to you guys is, you know, what are your thoughts on the TPP and how it's structured? And also, why isn't there someone who's pro-Trump on the panel today?
Well,
I can take that, Emily.
Sure. And, well, I'm just curious, too, Robert, is this enough of an issue to influence your vote? Do you know yet how you're going to vote in November?
Well, I would say this and illegal immigration is. Those two together are.
Mm-hmm.
There are other things that influence my vote, but for me, those two issues are very important, as well as the Second Amendment. I'm more concerned about trade agreements and how there are problems with our trade agreements and NAFTA as well. And I just feel like those are very important for the economy, and the economy is not doing as great as what the basic you know, public numbers are that, you know, that we see.
Okay.
And those things are very detailed. I can't get into them as an economist, but I can just tell you that things always sound rosy in the media if you're a Democrat. If you're not, everything you say or do is under very close scrutiny, and it, you know, they'll find a needle in a haystack for every candidate who's not a Democrat.
All right.
puts his way, who is a Republican.
Sure.
He'll find a needle in a haystack.
Well, thank you for your...
I guess the...
Yeah. I think we got the gist of your point, Robert. Thank you so much for calling in. Dave, you said you wanted to respond?
Yeah. Well, we definitely have been kind of anti-Trump so far, or very critical of Trump so far, and I just want to address that because it's definitely not that either Stefan and I are really pro-Hillary and anti-Trump. It's that as political scientists, our job is to monitor campaigns. And we look at campaigns and see what is likely to succeed, and campaigns are about winning. And there is a strategy that has been proven for 100-plus years now to work. There are certain things that we know work. And in watching this horse race, what we have seen for the last month is the Trump campaign fall farther and farther and farther behind. And it's not because of negative media attention. You can't blame all your missteps on the media and say, oh, there's a liberal bias on showing exactly what I said and that people don't like it. The frustration that I think everybody's hearing from both Stefan and I is that the Trump campaign is not running effectively right now. It's supposed to be a really competitive race right now. Hillary Clinton is, frankly, a weak candidate. She may be able to raise a lot of money, but there are a lot of people in this country who do not want to vote for her. And the Trump campaign should be doing much better right now in just hitting Hillary on things that she's weak with, on making a strong case for a Trump presidency. If he would adopt a traditional campaign philosophy, hire a manager who ran a traditional campaign style, he'd probably be 5 or 10 points up right now. Maybe not ahead of Hillary, but ahead of where he is right now. But he's not doing this. He insists on running his own campaign, on be innovative. He's sticking to his messages, which worked with the Republican base, but they don't work with the general election base. And it's really frustrating to watch this because as a political scientist, you know, our job is to pay attention to politics. And there are things that work. There are things that don't. It's kind of like if you come into a football coach position and you have an innovative strategy, but you lose all your games and you're getting blown out. Well, eventually maybe you should sit down and say, well, these other guys are winning. Maybe I should do what they're doing. It's just frustrating to watch.
The other thing is, if you want to do what Mitt Romney did and Karl Rove in the last election, you're welcome to do that. And that is to ignore numbers, ignore trends, say that the polls are wrong and that you know you're winning. And then on election night, all of a sudden you end up losing because you, instead of fine-tuning your campaign, you go on the illusion. Mitt Romney also had huge crowds of people right mm-hmm. towards the end yeah. who were enthusiastic about him. They loved him, and he got a little bit delusional about the extent of his support in the states necessary to win the election and get the Electoral College votes that are necessary. And you know, I'm really not a liberal. I'm sort of analytical, and in the case of Trump, it's hard to see how, you know, getting out of NATO or giving nuclear weapons to South Korea and Japan is a really great idea for U.S. foreign policy. I think some of the most conservative and hawkish international military experts have said this is a very bad idea. We, you know, are going to be undermining all of the strategies that we've had to prevent another world war and to kind of contain things. And I've also talked to a lot of my friends. You know, I served on Governor Branstad's, on one of his commissions in his first term, which was back before there was electricity. And I know a lot of people who are in agriculture. I live on a farm. Some of my neighbors are very successful big farmers. And basically undermining trade agreements and not negotiating with other countries to negotiate trade deals, which are never perfect, is a silly idea. We are in a global economy. Iowa, for example, needs good trade agreements with China, with Mexico, with all kinds of countries in order to sell its agricultural products, its technology, which we have a lot of ag technology that we sell. I've led a trade mission to Mexico with the Iowa Department with my good friend John Wong in the business college, where we promoted Iowa companies. And you can't just, you know, sort of trash trade deals. You have to sit down and improve them. And I guess, you know, TPP is actually something we ought to be looking at. It may not It may need improving. It may need to be fine-tuned. The other thing is, when the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, which is not exactly a liberal group, becomes extremely agitated about the Trump campaign, it tells me something about, you know, which groups are wanting clarification, or at least are very concerned about the current direction, you know, of that campaign. And they're certainly not liberals. So, you know, we try to report what seem to be trends and what seem to be problems. Yes, Hillary Clinton's campaign is very disturbing, and her emails and all that, you know, have caused her a lot of pain and suffering, and she went from 70% approval down to, you know, now a very narrow competition with Trump. And it just says that this year we have two candidates who are probably controversial and flawed.
All right. Well, the hour is moving fast. We're going to have to talk about presidential campaign politics a little bit next week. Of course, we'll have more time then Wednesdays at noon. But let's move over to Iowa's Senate race. This is between incumbent Senator Grassley and former Lieutenant Governor Patty Judge. Judge was at the Des Moines Register soapbox at the Iowa State Fair this week. Here's a bit of her speech.
Today, we cannot count on Chuck Grassley to do his job any longer. And, you know, he's been avoiding us. He has chosen not to stand up here in front of you at this soapbox and take your ideas and comments.
And, you know, we'll note here that Grassley does not typically do the soapbox, if he ever has. But he's admitted that this election's more of a challenge than previous ones. Do you think it'll hurt Grassley that he wasn't at this year's soapbox, Dave?
I don't really know. It would be a good thing for Judge to probably campaign on and say, well, he's ducking the voters. That usually resonates with voters. But Judge really has to get a much stronger campaign moving. I know I, for one, have not heard anything of her. And when you're 10 points down in the polls, you have to really – the onus is on you. The same things that we've been critical on Trump for, like you have to get a campaign moving and making progress because you're so far down. Same thing goes for Patty Judge. Mm-hmm. She's got a window. Grassley, I think, is vulnerable this year. But the Judge campaign has to come up with a good message that resonates with Iowa voters, and they have to start pounding it out, and they have to start doing it soon.
Mm-hmm. And in that NBC News Washington Street Journal poll that I referenced earlier, it's showing right now Grassley leading Judge 52-42%. This is holding pretty steady from last month. Stefan, what would Judge need to do to get her name more out there, to get Iowans familiar with her and her campaign?
I charge for that sort of advice because I would be giving it away for free to the Judge campaign. And Chuck Grassley called me the other day and said, if you have any good ideas, I'll pay you. Don't give them to Judge. So I'm kind of in a bind here. But the point is that I think the Democrats need to point at weaknesses in Senator Grassley's career. And there are not that many of them in a sense, because he's been a very, very astute politician. He's been a defender of, you know, good finances with his attacks on the military, overspending and stuff like that. One of the things that was brought up by a good friend of mine who is actually a Republican and a very wealthy, prominent one at that, is Grassley has been a senator for very long, and he's reaching in a quite an advanced age. And sometimes if you bring up the whole idea of term limits and the fact that we shouldn't have professional politicians who make a career out of politics, you know, that sometimes works quite well. And that hasn't come up, and it's partly because Democrats are afraid to bring up those kinds of things.
Hmm.
But you know, that has, you know, that is an issue. You know, how long can someone hang on and not give it up? And you know, Donald Trump is doing this with Hillary Clinton with health. I think there have been some stories that, you know, Senator Grassley has some health issues. I don't know if they're true or not. They may be just propaganda spread by evil Democrats. But those kinds of things might work. And I think the vacancy in the Supreme Court
That's
is an issue,
one.
Don't you think, Dave?
Yeah. A judge certainly has an uphill battle. She has to – I think the Supreme Court vacancy not being acted on is a big issue that Iowans care about, because it looks like Grassley and Republicans are not doing their job. Maybe just the idea that Grassley's been in for a while and that we're the whole country wants to get career politicians out of office. That's a good issue. But then Patty Judge has to come up with something she's offering to voters. That's a hard sell right now.
All right. Well, some great conversation today. I've enjoyed it. Stefan Schmidt, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
And Dave Anderson, thanks for coming in as well.
Always fun to be here.
Stefan is a university professor of political science at Iowa State, and Dave Anderson is an assistant professor of political science also at Iowa State University. Tomorrow on the show, we're going to be listening back to my and Ben Kiefer's visit to the Iowa State Penitentiary in Fort Madison. Tune in for that, River to River at noon. River to River is a production of Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Emily Woodbury. Thanks for joining us.